today is Michael Siegel, who will speak about mathematical questions related to the
Okay, thank you for introduction. I would like to thank organizers for inviting me to give a talk. And it's always nice to be here. So what if somebody asked me to formulate to tell in one word what I'm going to talk about, I would say it's about effective dynamics. So what is effective dynamics? When we have some dynamical system on certain scale and we want to pass from fine scale to the coarser scale, the dynamical system or dynamics on a finer scale generates dynamics on the coarser scale. And that's dynamics on the coarser scale I will call effective dynamics. Their examples are all over the place. In fact, every single dynamical system we know, every single dynamics is an effective dynamics. Newton's equations are effective equations for Schrodinger equation. Now, Maxwell equations come from the macroscopic equations called quantum electrodynamics. The Schrodinger equation governing nuclei come from the quantum chromodynamics, and so forth. If the string theory does give some description of the nature, then in its own turn, looking at the coarser scale, at the coarser and lower energies, we should derive usual quantum field theory. And of course, the same true about model equations, such as Nodinian Schrodinger equation. Now, I will illustrate these concepts on the recently discovered phenomenon of Bazin-Stein condensation. And so there are lots of experimental data and numerical as well as phenomenological computations. And it's very good to compare what we understand mathematically with what people know either experimentally or now it's a new computer. I have to figure out where it's page down. Is it correct? Okay. Bazin-Stein condensation was predicted by Einstein in 1984, before, in fact, invention of the quantum mechanics or before the invention of the discovery of the Schrodinger equation. And he observed, Einstein observed that for non-interacting Bose gases containing, say, Bose particles, Bose atoms, if temperature is lowered, then the gas undergoes phase transitions and macroscopic number of particles condense in a single state. In other words, you have a single we have a quantum state with a macroscopic occupation. You have a stone, but it behaves as a quantum object. And he predicted that conjecture that a similar phenomenon should be true also in real gases, which interact. It was discovered. So this prediction was confirmed experimentally in 1995 by two experimental groups, and one by Wiman and Cornell in Boulder and National Institute of Standards, and another by Ketterle in MIT. So the problem there was to cool down the gas in such a way so it will not condense in either in a liquid or crystallize. So you have to, in the same time, you have to rarefy it, and it took several decades of perfecting the this evaporation techniques or magnetic traps, laser traps, which actually started in Russia in about 50 years ago. Here's the picture of the condensation. Here's the Bazet gas just before the condensation sets in. To achieve condensation, you have to first cool the gas in a magnetic trap or in a laser beam, and in optical trap, and then you release it. You remove the trap, and as the gas expands, the temperature lowers further, and condensation starts. So here, this is distribution of particles with respect to the momentum. So at the XY plane, you have a momenta, and actually you can think about this as a wave function, as a solution of a certain equation, and we'll talk about this equation. Okay, so let me very briefly explain how to formulate mathematical framework for this phenomenon. To begin with, when we have a normal gas of interacting particles, we cannot talk about a single state of a state of a single particle. It doesn't exist. So what do we mean by Bose-Einstein condensation, that all the particles condense in the same macroscopic state? So let me start I see there are some problems with the font. Okay, let me start with a standard quantum mechanical framework. So n bosons, n particles described by n particle Schrödinger operator H sub n. So here's minus Laplacian in the x ith particle, and I don't see the n ith particle. This is external potential of the magnetic or optical trap. Then we have an interaction potential describing the interaction between different particles, and this operator acts on the symmetric product of a single particle state. So single particle state is L2 function on R3. So D is equal either to 1, 2, or 3, depending on the dimensions involved. So let's say D is equal to 3. So it's a symmetric product of L2 of R3. And so we want to consider a ground state of such a system. This is the eigenfunction of this Hamiltonian as a function of three n variables, x1, x2, xn. Is L2 function, and it corresponds to the lowest eigenvalue of this operator. So what we want to do, we won't like to describe, in fact, extract from this eigenfunction, we would like to extract a one-particle information. We would like to describe, extract information describing a single distribution, distribution of coordinates and momentum for a single particle. To do that, to be able to contract quantum information, you have to generalize somewhat your framework. You go from the wave functions to the so-called density matrices, or more generally to the certain states on the Sista algebra of observables. So density matrices are trace class operators with a positive trace class operators normalized by one. So you pass from the ground state wave function, ground state eigenfunction, to the projection on this ground state eigenfunction. And now I would like to contract information about n minus one particles and retain only information about a single particle. To do that, I perform a partial trace and define a one particle density matrix. One particle density matrix gamma sub n. So here's a trace over n minus one variables. In other words, gamma sub n is an operator acting on L2 of single particle state, L2 of R3. So we started with an operator, a density matrix operator, which acts on L2 of three n variables, and we ended up with an operator which acts on a single particle variables, on the three variables. So it acts on L2 of R3. Now, it's obvious, if you look at the check this formula, it's obvious that it's a non-negative operator which is less than one, if trace is equal to one. And moreover, you have the following property. If gamma sub n comes from the eigenfunction, which is a product of n functions, comes from the function which is product of n functions, then gamma sub n is a projection itself. And this is the if and only if. So in other words, if gamma sub n is a projection, then it comes from the function which is the product of single particle functions. So by the way, you cannot do this reduction on the level of functions, on the level of eigenfunctions. So whenever you go from eigenfunctions, you contract information, you lose this you don't have any more you don't have a solution of the Schrödinger equation anymore. Okay, so now let me do a speckle decomposition of this operator. So it's written here, it's lambda j eigenvalues, and this is projections on the corresponding eigenfunction chi sub j. The interpretation here is the following. So lambda j is interpreted in physics as probability for a single particle to be in the state kappa j, chi sub j. In other words, quantum description is already by itself probabilistic. If you have a single wave function, it gives you probability density for the particle to be in a certain point in the space. Now we have a new level of probabilistic description. We say also that a system with a probability lambda j is in a state kappa j, and then kappa j has its own probability density. Okay, so now I'm coming to the Penrose and Zagar criterion for Bose-Einstein condensation in n-particle systems. We say that we have 100% condensation if as n goes to infinity, one particle density matrix gamma sub n converges to a projection. And this is projection. Let me start again. When maximal eigenvalue of the one particle density matrix converges to one as n goes to infinity, and this is equivalent to the saying that density matrix itself converges to a projection, onto the eigenfunction or the limit of the eigenfunction, which corresponds to the largest eigenvalue. Okay. So once again, so the criterion is that the maximal eigenvalue of the density matrix converges to one, and density matrix itself, as a result, converges to a projection. What does it mean? It means that for very large n, the density matrix looks at the projection on the function chi sub 1, and as a result, the corresponding eigenfunction from which this density matrix derives is a product eigenfunction, is a n-fold product, symmetric product of chi sub 1, n-fold product of single function chi sub 1. So in a limit, the function, the ground state, factorizes in chi sub 1. Now, what are the chi sub 1? What are these functions in which this ground state factorizes? Sorry, I should mention the rigorous result here is due to the Lieben-Zeiringer in the year 2000 is the proof of Bazan-Stein condensation of this result in so-called the Gross-Pitayevsky limit. It's not thermodynamic limit, the so-called mean field limit. And I will come to this limit in a short while. Okay, to explain what chi sub 1, I have to give a short course on mean field theory. So I'm not assuming any, I'm sure that many people in the audience know either everything which what I'm saying or some parts of it, but I'm not assuming any previous knowledge. So I'm addressing to those who don't know what it's all about. So it's a short course in short introduction in the mean field theory. So let's look, we have a system of n bosons, of n particles. And if you take, let's take ith particle of this system, and then the potential which this particle is experiencing. First of all, its external potential, its potential of magnetic trap, is V of xi. Secondly, its potential is produced by all other particles in the system, but this one. Now, I can write this potential as V of xi times V. V, if you remember, is a two-particle potential convolution with a macroscopic density, where macroscopic density, quantum density, is defined as a sum of delta functions localized at a particle positions. So this is so-called observable. So this rho micro is quantum observable of the particle density. If you want to compute particle density, so average particle density, you average this observable in the quantum state. Okay, so the mean field limit consists in the passing from this microscopic density to some kind of a smeared one. Assume that there are lots of particles, they're relatively close to each other, and you can replace this discrete density by some kind of continuum limit. So this is what I call rho mean field. And rho mean field. And so now we have a new Schrödinger operator. We have a minus for ith particle. For the ith, if you look at the Schrödinger operator of the ith particle, we have kinetic energy of this ith particle minus Laplacian, plus the potential, effective potential, experienced by this ith particle. It's external potential plus kind of an averaged out potential, self-averaged out potential produced by the other particles. And now the state of this ith particle is the eigenfunction of this operator H. This operator H corresponding to the lowest, let's say, to the lowest eigenvalue. So phi of x, so the single particle state now, the state of the ith particle in the system is eigenfunction phi of x, corresponding to the lowest eigenvalue of this operator. And the mean field approximation consists in assuming that this mean field density is exactly the one produced by this eigenfunction corresponding to the lowest eigenvalue. So if we plug this into the equation, for the function phi, as eigenvalue equation, we obtain equation which is written out here, which is stationary Hartree equation. So it's minus Laplacian plus V, where V is external potential, plus convolution of the V small, where V small is a pair potential with a phi square, times, and everything acts on state phi, and we have eigenvalue problem, nonlinear eigenvalue problem for this lowest eigenfunction phi. In a similar way, I can. I need one more limit. We assume that potential becomes more and more short range, so it more and more looks like a delta function. So this is in the physics lingo is called scattering length goes to zero. So instead of a so-called potential, you to describe more detailed interparticle correlations, you introduce so-called T matrix and replace potential by T matrix, and then assume that this T matrix has a parameter which goes to zero. So it's a scattering, it's called scattering length. At the end of the day, V of x converges to the delta function, an equation which I wrote before becomes a stationary nonlinear Schrödinger equation. Stationary nonlinear Schrödinger equation, or if you wish, a special case of the Hartree equation. And completely similarly, we can derive time-dependent nonlinear Schrödinger equation. Again, using exactly the same philosophy, starting with a one-particle equation and replacing a macroscopic density by kind of a smeared continuous density, and then assuming that this continuous density comes from the solution of the equation we are looking at, in which it participates, we arrive to this nonlinear Schrödinger nonlinear. Okay, so that's a good question. A depends on the material. In most of the gases, A is positive. In lithium 7, it's negative. So in other words, scattering length could be negative. Positive scattering length describes repulsion. Negative scattering length describes attraction. How attraction comes out is due to so-called Feldberg resonance around zero. If you put your system on so-called Feldberg resonance, you can flip. In fact, you can experimentally flip A. And that's one of the beauty of the field, is that there are lots of experimental data. You can really do experiments on what you theoretically predict. And later, and then we can pass to the. I remind that V of X is a confining potential of the trap. It's drawn there on the picture in the lower right corner. And in general, we can look at more general equations, of course. We can generalize nonlinearity to a standard general nonlinearity. And we can look at the more general potentials. Of course, potentials which physicists will take are confining potentials, which goes to infinity and infinity. But experimentally, nobody produces this equation, these potentials. They're not. So the potentials which do not go to infinity at infinity, which saturate at some point, also experimentally produced, and all potentials which go to zero at infinity appear as well. Okay. So here, the main open problem is rigorous derivation of the Gross-Pitayevsky equation. Namely, you want to start with a nonlinear Schrödinger equation, which is written out here, nonlinear Schrödinger equations for n particles. With an n particle Schrödinger equation. It's a linear equation in 3n variables. And then you want to do two things. You want to send number of particles to infinity, and the scattering length, the parameter in the interparticle interaction to zero, in such a way that the product is constant. This is so-called mean field limit. And you want to show that if you start initially with a factorized datum. If at time zero your datum is a product, symmetric product of the functions or product, n-fold product of the functions psi naught, then uh, as in the limit as n goes to infinity, solution of this equation will converge to a product, to the n-fold product, to the n-fold product of some other function psi, and this other function psi is a solution of Gross-Pitayevsky equation with the initial condition psi naught. So there are partial important results in this direction. It starts probably with a work, with a, some non-rigorous beautiful work of Len Gross in the 60s. Then the first rigorous results were by Hepp in 74 and Geneber and Velo 79. And these results were done in a second quantized framework. In other words, the number of particles was not exactly conserved, but it was almost conserved. It was kind of grand canonical ensemble, if you wish. So it's in other words, a restriction on the number of particles was approximately satisfied. So they were allowed fluctuations with a non-conserved number of particles. Then Frohlich and Tsai and Yao derived the result for the fixed number of particles. Then there was a breakthrough by Bardos and his collaborators in 2002-2003, and improvement by Erdos and Yao in 2003. But still, though we're close to the solution, we are not still there. The problem is still open. So there is a significant progress, but the problem is eludes still and is still open. Okay. How much time do you have? 15. So I have to make an executive decision whether I'm going to the blackboard or staying with the transparencies. Let me try blackboard. So I'm. Here? Okay, so now I would like to concentrate entirely on Gross-Pitayevsky equation. So what you dp/dt is equal minus Laplacian psi plus v psi, well, plus let's say four pi alpha lambda here, lambda psi square psi. Gross-Pitayevsky equation. And I would like to describe some results and open problems about this equation. So first of all, general properties. Let me remind people here. Well, I should not remind people here, but let me state some general properties of this equation. The first of all, so for NLS, it is NLS, but it depends to which community you talk. So if you talk to condensed matter physicists, it was written by Gross-Pitayevsky in, in 1961 independently, right, as equation. First, it was written, I believe, for the superfluid. And then there were conjectures that's also true for Bose-Einstein condensation. But if you talk to a community of the plasma physicists, then they will tell you it's a nonlinear Schrödinger equation. Or they will tell you it's just an approximation to a Maxwell equation. Yes. But also, Gross-Potievsky people also look at the non-trapping potential. No, it's a purely subculture. Nothing to do with the equation itself. Okay. So D 2 3. What do we have? We have a global existence for a positive, and blow up for a negative under certain. Lambda, yes. Lambda. Well, so what do I want to do? I want to have lambda. I want to have normalization. Probably. I want to normalize it like that to the number of particles. B. B is a Hamiltonian system. You have we have several conservation laws. The two, the most important conservation laws, is for the energy. Energy, E of psi, which is 1/2 gradient psi square plus 1/2 V psi square plus lambda over 4 psi to the 4. And number of particles. So here I use obviously terminology coming from condensed matter physics. So N of psi is equal to integral of psi square. Okay. Also under very general conditions, it has a ground state, which is solitary wave psi of x, t phi of x, e to the I mu t, with a, and I assume that I define ground state by condition that phi is greater than zero, is positive. Now, in physics, ground state is defined as in physics literature, ground state is a minimizer of energy for a fixed number of particles. So phi is defined as minimizer for number of particles fixed. And which is, so, Under certain additional conditions, this is ground state defined here will be usual physical ground state, and in this case mu eigenvalue in a stationary Ginzburg-Landau equation, and mu here is a Lagrange multiplier, and therefore has an interpretation of chemical potential. So under other general conditions, we have existence and stability of the ground state. Namely, so let me look at the two or three the most important conditions. So, one, So I'll assume, let me take more general nonlinearities. So nonlinearity g of psi square psi as psi 2 delta times psi, where delta is greater than 0 and less than infinity. Okay, so three in the most important cases are the following. So minus Laplacian plus v of x has a ground state, has a discrete spectrum at the bottom. So has a ground state. Has a ground state. And n, which is interpreted as a number of particles, here is very small. Relatively small in the several units. Second condition is V has a, so this is just usual bifurcation theory. So V has a local minimum, and here there's no conditions on lambda. Lambda is negative, n is very large, and there's also condition on delta. Delta is less than 4 divided by d minus 4 plus. So this result is originally due to the, in one dimension, due to the Floer and Weinstein. Floer and Allen Weinstein. And third case is where V is confining. So here there's no restriction on whether V is confining or not. V is confining. So this is confining, and lambda goes to infinity as infinity, and lambda is positive. So this is the standard variational calculus, and you can find this theorem in a paper by Lieb, Zeiringer, and Ingvarsson. Now, stability is more delicate. Delicate question. So if V is confining, then we have so-called orbital stability. And we can't expect anything else. So orbital stability means that if I take my ground state psi, psi or phi, and I apply symmetry transformations to this ground state, I will have the whole manifold of solutions. It's all manifold of the ground state. Manifold ground state. For example, I can apply translations, I can apply rotations if not rotation invariant, and so forth. Gauge transformations. So, and orbital stability means that if I start close to this manifold, then I stick around for all time near this manifold. So it's extension of Lyapunov stability. Sorry? Once again? Means it goes to infinity to infinity. Okay? So if V goes to zero to infinity, or to constant at infinity, if it's not confining. In fact, if it goes to constant in some cone, not necessarily in all directions, as x goes to infinity, then we have asymptotic stability. In other words, this trajectory starting near the manifold eventually converges to the manifold. It doesn't have to converge to a single point, but it converges to the manifold and just goes closer and closer to the manifold. And this result is for in the case I due to the Soffer and Weinstein, Michael Weinstein. I is a Soffer and Michael Weinstein. And in the case double I, It's a recent result due to the my student Gang Zhao and myself. Sorry? Close to the, yes, it's a close to the ground state. And this result, Gang Zhao and myself, is built on the previous work of Stoker and Weinstein and Buslaev and Perelman and refinement in the work of Buslaev and Sulem. Sorry? This one in all dimensions. Okay. Finally, I say a few words about dynamics. Sorry? Yes. What do you mean, dynamics? No. We're talking about subcritical case. If it's focused on equation, subcritical. So in the case, so for Weinstein, in the case one, there's no equation. Because in this case, data is nonlinearity is very small. Okay. Finally, dynamics or effective dynamics. So assume you have potential like that, and you start with a soliton somewhere here. The question is, so what happens to the soliton, how it starts moving around in this potential? So we expect that it will be kind of oscillating, and if potential goes to constants at infinity, then it eventually will settle down near the bottom, right? Okay, so, and this is result jointly with Jörg Frolik, Steven Gustafsson, and Lars Jonsson, who is here, Jonsson and myself. So it essentially states that for the time, if initial conditions are very close to the soliton with a parameter epsilon, so you're not as gentle as promised. No. So then, if initial conditions were close to the soliton, then the center of the soliton will move along the classical trajectory. So let me write it. The center of the soliton moves along classical trajectory. Let's say A double dot is equal to minus gradient with some constant here, minus gradient V of A for the time less than 1 over epsilon, depending on the potential, let's say to the power of 3/2, where epsilon is a ratio between length scale of soliton and the length scale of potential of the potential itself. Finally, I would like to, do I have time for formulating open problems? 2 minutes, okay, that's great. Okay, so the previous results here were due to the Bronsky and Girard and Frolik, Tsai, and Yao in the year 2000. And the big question is, of course, what happens for all time? So I assume if potential is not confining, if it goes to constant at infinity, then we can combine this with a result by Gang Zhao to show that eventually it converges to the stationary state here, to the stable state near the bottom of the well. So in other words, we don't know yet whether we have overlap of the time intervals between this result. Sorry? non-confining, going constant to infinity, when you have radiation to infinity, whether we have the overlap of the result of the time interval between this result and between the result by Gang Zhao. In the case of confining potential, one expects here, of course, perpetual motion, either periodic or quasi-periodic, more precise, more something in the spirit of Cooksin and Wain and Bourguin and others. And finally, let me formulate three big problems three directions which I think will be three very important what I think is exciting directions in this area, in this field. Of course, one can still improve many things here and prove new results. But to me, the most interesting parts are the following: it's open problems, open directions, open. The first problem is the tunneling. So these three problems, in fact, overlap. So tunneling could be something like that. So you have potential which is with a local minimum, not a global minimum, and you place the soliton somewhere here. So then for critical n, soliton will be under critical n, soliton will be stable above critical n, soliton will tunnel under the barrier and escape to infinity with some exponentially small rate. There is also problem of tunneling could be of this form. So you have a stable potential. Nevertheless, you can have tunneling from this situation as well. But I will say second problem is macroscopic corrections. So as I mentioned at the very beginning, we derived nonlinear Schrödinger equation or Gross-Pitiyevsky equation starting with the n-body system. Now, along the way, so in first linear approximation, we have Gross-Pitiyevsky equation, but there are lots of corrections to this. So how to compute the kind of excitations around Gross-Pitiyevsky solutions? In a sense, you can think about this as, I will use a fashionable word, non-commutative PDEs, linear PDEs. Non-commutative because you can rewrite, in second quantization, you can rewrite n-body system in operator form as d phi I d phi dx, and have minus Laplacian phi of x, and here is some nonlinearity which I will not write down here, where phi of x are operators on the Fock space. When the Planck constant goes to zero, or some other small parameter like number of particles, effective number of particles goes to infinity, or Planck constant goes to zero, then this equation converges exactly to the nonlinear Schrödinger equation. And this was actually physical derivation of the nonlinear Schrödinger equation. They don't go through the n-body procedure, unlike Bardos and collaborators and Yao and Erdos. They don't go through the n-body equations, but they go through the second quantization. And third one, the last one, is positive temperatures. So far, I was talking only about zero temperatures, and Gross-Pitiyevsky equations appears in a zero temperature approximation. But of course, nobody reached yet the zero temperatures. Even for small, very small temperatures, we don't have 100% gross Bose-Einstein condensation. We have condensed particles, but you also have thermal particles coupled to these condensed particles. Thank you.